Oh, okay. Paul Bendorf. Could, do we have a roll call?
Congresswoman Whitehorn.
Here.
Congressman Tillman.
Here.
Congressman Maker. Congresswoman Pratt.
That's it.
Congressman Shaw.
Here.
Declare we have a quorum. Congressman Maker said he had an appointment for his email. Now, let's see, the next, business is roll call. Prayer. Angela?
Yes, sir. Heavenly Father, thank you for this beautiful day, and I just ask that you be with all my colleagues, as always, in their homes, and keep them in good health, as well as all the employees at the Osage Nation. Bless everyone, and with all the illness that has taken place among our children and in our schools, and just look over them and keep our homeless safe and warm, and as always, be there for them as you are and your promise to us. And I pray that they know to turn to you, Lord, that you are always there for us when we need you. And bless my brothers and sisters in arms as they, wherever they may serve, as they're away from their homes and their families, and keep our elders safe and warm. And I pray that everyone is blessed in this new season. I ask all these things in your name. Amen.
Amen. Next item of business is the approval of the minutes. October 3rd.
I have a question for the committee. What date was this? October 3rd. It's been a while back. At the top of the page, we adopted a committee substitute. And then the next motion after the motion to adopt the committee substitute is a motion to amend ONCR 1646.
That's strange.
Yeah. that makes me all crazy. Like, well, how do we do that? I don't know, are you the clerk of this meeting or
I just want to place, because then it says nothing to postpone, and it picks back up.
Well, it was a bill.
Yeah, we were visiting 16123.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the middle of visiting 16123, it shows that we were trying to amend ONCR 1646. And then we go back to, then we postpone ONCA 1623. And then 1646 comes up later on in the committee meeting.
Seems to be that that would be ONCA 1623 to replace ONCR 1646.
I don't know. How about we just not approve these and let somebody at a later date listen to that recording and try to give us a clearer view of what we did there, because it doesn't make sense to me.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So what she said, so moved.
Second.
We're in favor, say yes. Yes. All right, so we postpone that approval of those minutes for October 3rd. The next item is consideration. ONCA 1710, an act to appropriate the sum of $442,000 to the restricted real property repurchase fund and to establish an alternate inspection date. I'm sponsor of that bill on the term meeting over to Maria Whitehorn. Before we do, I'd like to ask Rose Cass and Melissa to join us at the table. And Maria, I'd like to discuss what we can in open session. I don't know how much that is, but we provide for an executive session. Some of this has to be an executive session. So I've got this time to turn the meeting over to you.
Okay, thank you, Chairman Superdahl. As Congressman Superdahl stated, we're considering ONCA 1710 as an appropriation for $442,000 to the Restricted Real Property Repurchase Fund. We have Bruce Gass and Melissa Curry at the table with us to talk about this purchase. And like I said, like Congressman Superdahl said, I don't know how much we can talk about in open session. I guess my question is right now is the fund balance right now, do you guys have any idea where our fund balance is on the Restricted Real Property Purchase Fund?
Yes.
Currently, can you give me that amount, Ms. Curry? And let me clarify. Bruce would be considered your supervisor, or are you guys are you independent of each other? Would you please tell us the structure of what we're dealing with now? We used to call it Tribal Development and Land Acquisition Department. I believe that there's been some changes in that. Can we have a brief explanation of how your department has changed and what your roles are in your department before we continue on?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Tribal Development, we still work hand in hand with projects together like this. Mm-hmm. And currently in the organizational structure, there's a land acquisition department, which is Melissa's the manager of that department, and there's Tribal Development, mm-hmm. Which I'm the director of that department.
Is Melissa's title, are you considered the coordinator or the director of land acquisition?
Land manager.
You're the land?
Property manager.
Okay. Property manager is your title. Okay, and do you answer to Bruce or are you guys separate?
We're separate.
So you answer to the chief?
Casey.
To Casey? Okay. Mr. Johnson? Okay. All right. Now, back, my question is how are we doing in our restricted real property repurchase fund? Where are we at?
Fund balance is $58,552.59. We have a purchase that's been pending for a while because of some title issues with BIA that we have a semi-obligated $24,963, leaving us with $33,589.59.
Okay. All right. Thank you so very much, John, for those totals. And the appropriation of $442,000 is to replenish that fund. Is it for one specific purpose, or will that amount bring us up to a level that there'll be a fund balance in there for maybe four purchases that we haven't considered yet?
There's two purchases I want to discuss.
Okay.
Specifically. Then I've asked for an additional $126,000 to kind of replenish the account for these smaller purchases.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that would roughly cover given an estimated base of $1,200 per acre. Plus, if we add an extra 5%, that would roughly buy us another 100 acres.
So just kind of to have a rat hole there for that property fund. Which I think is a good idea. That's what we have done. Is there any more questions that the committee feels like they have for either the sponsor or Ms. Curry that we can do an open session that's specific to a purchase? Congressman Tillman.
Thank you. The semi-obligation you were talking about earlier in the amount of 24, can you elaborate on that, what that is?
We have been, we made an offer to purchase an undivided interest from an estate, a restricted estate. And since we made that initial offer, a lot of title issues have come into play, and it's a long story. And it's related to an estate, so I don't know how much of it would really be private. But this last offer that we've kind of held on to is because there's a Native American church on the property, and we would like to secure that tract. If we can get nothing else, we would like to secure that tract.
We appraise these properties, correct?
We go off of the BIA appraisal.
Okay, and that's the only appraisal?
Yes.
And you mentioned $1,200 per acre?
That's a rough estimate, based on what we've been seeing in the last few months, and then plus what we've been seeing coming in from land buyback. That's a very rough estimate.
Right, sure. When these properties come up, these restricted real properties, do they, are they also open to anybody else that wants to put a bid on it?
If the property is owned 100% by an individual Osage, the tribe has first right of refusal. The party might come in with an outside offer, give the nation a chance to match it or not, or they may just come directly to the nation. We can negotiate within the parameters of the law up to 5% above appraisal. So at some point, we have to get an appraisal, or they have to provide us with. On the undivided interest owner, the first offer by the CFR goes to their family members. And then if they all pass, the nation has the next right of refusal. So then they come to us with what they want. We can negotiate, or we can request the appraisal. And we take on them track by track. As you'll see, there's two more offers on the table, but they're way over appraisal. So we can't entertain them. But on one of them, we may want to do a counter offer. So if we had this extra money in there, we could go ahead and do the counter offer. So that's kind of why we need the money to work with.
Paying upwards of $1,800, $2,000 an acre. Some of these people are paying that out in that area, from what I know.
Yeah, that's.
Is that the counter offers that we have?
Since I prepared this, we've seen some appraisals come in a little higher. So that may not get us 100 acres. It might only get us 80 acres. But by law, we have to have the appraisal, some appraisal. Either we have to do one, or we can secure one from BIA through the landowner. And then we can go up to 5% above, which is in the law, so.
I have a question about appraisals. Congressman Tillman, are you still on your line of questioning? Do you want to continue?
The land that we desire to buy back through this, is it workable land, or does it need to be cleaned up? Is there going to be additional expenses?
The two that I'm reading today, one of them is former crop land that's been converted to pasture, so it could be cleaned up and converted back to crop land, or we could continue to use it as a pasture. It'd probably be sprayed and used as a hay meadow. So there's a lot of potential for this property, plus it nearly adjoins property right now.
Do we lease that out, or do we put it over?
We have a grazing lease on that other property and a hunting lease. That we lease the competitive bid through the nation at some fee. This other property has commercial potential, and it's in a good location. It might require some input, but that's what we want to talk about.
And leasing this out, it's my understanding that the Blue Stem Ranch Board has that option as well. Is that correct? To lease these types of lands if they wanted to, from what I'm hearing?
I don't know how they put the parcels that we buy in the restricted real property fund. I don't know how we put those out for
He said that yesterday.
He said that yesterday, if I'm not mistaken, that the Blue Stem Ranch Board is free to, they'll process, to publicize the opportunity to bid on restricted or fee land to nation owners for grazing or hunting and fishing opportunities. So, and they would have as equal opportunity as anyone else to lease some of these restricted properties through that process.
My question too would be to that, Mr. Cass, what if you have a landowner that has adjacent acreage to it who has in the past leased that property and run livestock on it? Is there any exception given to people that have that border on the properties that we, because I know that in federal lands, that's always considered first, is if you have adjoining property to those. Do we take that into consideration at all, or is it all through RFP?
Well, so, Madam Chair, it's kind of the standard that we've been utilizing to make some of these decisions and determinations. It's the Earth Act that was approved by the Osage Congress, and it lays out some criteria that we need to satisfy and some operational issues that we need to satisfy, and then we put in place the opportunity for competition process. So to answer your question, yes, there's considerations, but we have to be as transparent and fair as we can and we create these opportunities to be so situated.
Okay, thank you, Dereve.
Blue Stem Ranch Board aware of these properties that could be purchased and then leases be available to?
Not that I know of.
Mr. Cass?
We can make the board aware of these opportunities when they come in. Absolutely. We'll do that. Previously, the previous leases, I think we published and went out for a lease opportunity through request for proposals about a year and a half ago, approximately, with everything that we had available at the time.
Thanks.
So any new purchases, then we take the same approach. Now, keep in mind that when we acquire these properties, we also inherit or assign leases that are already existing on those properties that have a term.
Okay, thank you. Congressman Edwards.
Thank you. When we first started appropriating money to this restricted property, real property fund, my recollection is that we said we're going to do this so long as we make a bid on every property that is available, and you can first you didn't negotiate beyond the appraised value, and then we added a 5%. So is that process still happening?
Madam Chair, we're still following the law and making offers on restricted property that are made available to the nation in compliance with the Indian Land Consolidation Act that the Bureau of Indian Affairs is following. So they notify us that there's an opportunity to acquire land or that the restrictions on this property will be removed. Then we take action when we get those notifications and evaluate this property. And there's criteria in law that we have to satisfy in this restricted repurchase fund before we make an offer. And one of those is funds have to be available, and it has to meet several criteria before we make an offer.
Thank you, Mr. Cass. Point being that every property that comes to us that meets that criteria, you are making an offer. Well, then I don't understand that.
Because there's criteria established in the law.
I know, and I said every property that meets that criteria, you are making an offer on it.
We can't unless we have funds unless there's money in the fund to make an offer. That's
okay.
Another restriction in law. If the funds aren't there, we don't have the ability to make an offer.
All right, so if there's money there, and the property meets the criteria, then every property is getting an offer. Because that was part of the deal, was we didn't want to be picking and choosing whose property we were making offers on.
We've been implementing that process for some time in compliance with the law as it's written right now.
So there'll be a list of how many people want to meet, you know, I always try to look at writing to understand this, but there's gonna be a list of how many people are offering those up.
there's a list of how many people meet the criteria, and then you guys, if there's money, you make an offer to every one of them. If there's not money, you come back and tell us, we don't have enough money to make an offer on every one of these that meets the criteria. So, is that right?
Mr. Cass?
I'm not really sure I understand how far where you're going with your question, but when money is available and the property meets the criteria, we're required by law to make an offer, and that's what we do. So when the money's not available, we miss those opportunities.
Okay, I get that. But so for today, there's only two properties that meet the criteria that we don't have money for? Because they're only asking for money for two properties, right?
Well, before we get into those properties, which I would prefer, you know, or respectfully request that it's in executive session before we start talking about those parcels, but based on what Melissa just said a few minutes ago, that some of those values exceed what we really feel, based on experience, exceed the appraised value. So until that landowner is willing to share their appraisal or we go get an appraisal, we're not in a position to negotiate. But we're not going to do that because we don't have money in the fund to make an offer.
Okay, I guess I'm not asking my question clear. You've got a group of parcels that meet the criteria and that you need money to purchase. And what I'm asking is, with respect to the amount of money in here, which is tribal money, all the properties that meet the criteria have been included in this amount of money that's requested. Because otherwise it looks like we're picking and choosing which properties we want to buy.
Which we should.
Well, that's not what the law contemplated, because we were concerned that we were going to pick and choose.
Mr. Cass.
Madam Chair, my knowledge, every property that's available for us right now is on this paper that's been provided, this document that's been provided. And that's why we're here to talk about those today.
Lynn, you've been emailed the document. Do we have an email copy of this document that Ms. Curry has?
Well, in this document, there's two properties on here that they're asking a lot of appraisal. I mean, we know it's over appraisal. You all know it's over appraisal. So we can't make an offer on that. We could possibly come back with a counter offer, but we'll have to, one, I know meets the criteria. The other one, I don't even know if it'll meet the criteria.
Do we have that document?
I have a copy. I'm sorry, I didn't make copies. Could we get copies for everybody after them?
Yes. Is that a confidential document, Ms. Curry?
Yes.
Is it marked confidential?
Yeah.
Marked confidential.
Would you please have the clerk put the confidentiality stamp on that and then make copies for us? So, does that answer your question, Congressman Edwards? We have a list of the properties that are available right now, and we can probably talk about that more in executive session.
Yeah, I just want to make sure about that. And then the second thing I wanted to ask, and this shouldn't be confidential, is we continue to spend tribal dollars on these restricted properties, and we're doing that because this is not land buyback money, right?
No.
Are we not able to figure out how to spend, and I think I heard the answer to this, but we might as well hear it in public. We're not able to figure out how to utilize land buyback money for these properties.
Three of these properties are owned by one person, and if you are a single interest owner, you're not eligible for land buyback. They will only purchase tracts from the undivided interest owners.
Right. Okay, not having had the benefit of seeing the document, I'm kind of shooting in the dark, but I wanted to, what's your anticipated, do you bring these requests to us each and every time you get an individual offer? How do you go about bringing these to us?
Well, I think we bring the offers when we run out of money.
Mr. Cass.
There have been times we've attempted to approach the Congress through the executive branch to fund that put a value in this repurchase fund, which is a revolving fund that has criteria we have to satisfy before we make an offer. Sometimes that's received well and it gets funded, but then one or two opportunities will deplete that fund quickly. We don't know when we're going to get the offers, so that's kind of our part of the discussion today is if there's a level of funding that can be put into resources that can be put into this fund, we would have the ability to follow the law as written and make these offers in the future. So that's kind of a hard question to answer because sometimes it's a case-by-case situation.
Last question. Where do we find the process that publishes the opportunity and shows us some of the information that you've described today? The written process.
Thank you. I think we can provide you with that. We can provide the, desire of the committee to see that process. We can provide it.
No.
That they really need to be stamped, the confidentiality stamp.
Is she sending that little number?
The C, yeah. Hillary Clinton got in trouble for that.
Well, again, we're saying, hey, does the Bluestem Ranch Board know how this works? Do we know how this works? Does the public know how this works? And so I don't see how they could know how it worked unless we had some sort of published process on how this works in terms of leasing or whatever. So I'm looking for that. Matter of fact.
Well, Madam Chair, sorry to interrupt.
Yes, Mr. Casco.
We have a law that's been adopted by the Congress on how we're going to proceed with these restricted and trust property opportunities. And it's public. It's a public document. So I'm not sure what you mean. You want to see the policy?
I heard you say we have a process to publicize the opportunity in response to.
Yes.
And that's what I'm looking for. Where is that written process that shows how you publicize the opportunity, what the public sees, and what they're able to react to in terms of written notice that there are properties available for lease?
The process would be in the executive branch and it would be documented. Does the committee want us to send the process over, the procedure that we follow?
Well, how does the public know what procedure to follow? Wait a minute, can I just get an answer to that question?
That is a good answer. How does the public know? How would I know that where to look for available lands for lease that's available through our land office of the Osage Nation? If I didn't work here and come up on this hill, how would I know where to look for that? That's the question, I think, basically. And I have you. In just one moment, I'm going to get Congressman Supernaw, and then I'll call on you. But I think that's a question worthy of an answer.
Thank you.
When we have these opportunities, there's a section in the Osage Nation website. There's a tab that says opportunities. You click on that tab, it'll identify all kinds of procurement opportunities that the nation has available. So that's one of the best methods that we have. And then on top of that, we publish in the local and surrounding papers. And that's another method to let the public know that these are opportunities that are available for Osages, non-Osages, whatever the case may be. So I think that's, I hope that answers.
Thank you. Yeah, I would request the policy, the written policy and procedure on that.
Okay, we can probably get to that. Congressman Supernaw.
These are good questions and things we need to know, but they go way beyond the purpose of this bill. This bill, this restricted property fund, only pertains to the mechanism for purchasing properties. It doesn't go on to cover the maintenance and operation of the properties after we purchase them. But I would like, while we're still in executive session, to just briefly discuss this real property, restricted real property fund, how it got established and what was done with it. It was established a number of years ago to purchase restricted properties. We can't make offers from this money for fee-owned properties. Only restricted, and usually they don't have to be. I don't know what's going on.
Mr. Johnson was wondering where his copy of the thing went. We're careful with handing out confidential documents, Mr. Johnson. Sorry about that, for the interruption.
Well, we established this a number of years ago to buy restricted properties, and at the time, it was hoped, and we were anticipating this Cobell money coming down, and it was hoped at that time that by buying some fractionated interest, when the Cobell process was put into place in an operation, that we'd maybe be able to buy the other remaining undivided interest with federal monies. So while we're still in open session, I'd like to ask Bruce to kind of give us a description of how that has worked and how much land we've actually acquired approximately since this has been in effect. And I think it's been, I don't know, what, 3 or 4 years?
A while.
Thank you, Mr. Cass. That's a good question.
Since the enactment of this legislation, of course, it's been amended a few times. The nation has increased their land base considerably from about 5 years ago now. I believe we have over 3,000, an interest in over 3,000 acres, 4,000 acres, or undivided interest in over 4,000 acres, and we probably have about 1,000 acres or more restricted, maybe 100% of the acreage. So that's what it, that's what this, legislation has done for us. Now, I digress a little bit. In my opinion, we've exercised our sovereignty as a tribe by buying Indian land, restricted Indian land, and retained the restrictions, and the property today still has that same arrangement to the federal government to be restricted. And contrary to what took place in the past, Indian land went out of Indian hands, removed restrictions, and we have had the opportunity through this law to increase our land base, hang on, ensure that Indian land stays in Indian hands, and also the opportunity through, not only through this legislation, but the opportunity is there for some of our tribal members and Osage's landowners to receive a fair price for their property. So that's to me, some of the high points, and Melissa may have more to add to that, but I think those are the high points that we've expanded our land base, and
Congressman Shaw, I have a person in our audience that wants to speak, but I guess since we're still having discussion at the table, if you'll just yield to the members at the table, and then I'll get you just as soon as we finish this line of questioning. Congressman Shaw.
Mr. Cass, we're talking about restricted property here that we'll purchase, and I've heard you use the phrase, keep it in Indian hands, Osage hands, for the most part, instead of, I saw the term in the original legislation was, so it doesn't alienate Osage-owned land by going to non-Indians or non-Osages. What is the benefit to the nation when the nation acquires restricted land as opposed to non-restricted land? What can we do differently about it where that would make that more desirable than non-restricted land? What does that enable us to do with it? What's your understanding?
Mr. Cass?
Thank you, Madam Chair. By the nation acquiring this restricted property, it puts us in a the same position that it puts others outside of the nation. And where I feel that we would be a good partner for some of these restricted owners that have an interest in this land with us, when we're talking about fractionated interest. And those are some of the, that's one of the key elements I see. And Melissa maybe have a lot more to add to that, which would be, to me, be appropriate.
Ms. Kern?
Well, the restricted land, I mean, it can't be alienated or encumbered without approval of the secretary, which gives you an extra layer of protection, like from trespass, adverse possession, or, I mean, even so for damages. So you have that extra layer of protection from the government. I mean, even with the Hearth Act, we still have that extra layer of protection. And it keeps people, I mean, I think the biggest thing would be the trespass issue. The first year in 2015, we collected about $6,000 in trespass rental on some of these properties that we acquired that the leases had lapsed. And so we went back in and had BIA collect the trespass, and we got leases on them. And that not only benefited the nation, but it benefited, you know, the landowners that we own with, because, you know, they weren't getting any rent. And so I could say that I think we've been helpful to the landowners. There's probably only one or two tracts that we are having difficulty getting leased, but that's because they're not in a good location. And they're not set up, they're not fenced. You know, every piece of land's not going to be the most desirable, but some of these tracts were purchased before those definitions were set in place to what we were going to buy.
Mr. Katz.
One little thing to add to that is that we've also been in a position to negotiate for a higher lease rate on those properties as opposed to selling for the appraised value. So that in turn helps the nation and the other restricted landowners on that tract.
Congressman Subrenal.
I would like to ask Bruce, how has the strategy worked? When have we been able to, the COBEL funds, been able to acquire more of an interest in the fractionated properties that we own? Or I guess there's a lot of opportunities still out there. Well, we haven't. Well, are we going to be able to increase our holdings through the COBEL money in lands we already own, as well as, of course, that's a different subject, but I'm sure there's new opportunities.
Well, go ahead and let that answer happen, and I'm in agreement with you. We kind of probably need to narrow this conversation into the bill that's in front of us, ONCA 1710. Bruce, do you have a brief answer?
Sure, thank you, Chair. By securing restricted interest prior to the land buyback program, we've gained familiarity with a lot of restricted land challenges, and we've overcome several of those. And now when we go through this land buyback program, it's my opinion that we would secure roughly between 4,000 to 5,000 possibly more restricted acre equivalents through the land buyback program, which doesn't cost the nation money on the front end, and we'll have to take care of it later. But we also, that money also generates revenue for it, or that property also generates revenue for us to help take care of it through leases. So to my understanding, there's about 138,000 restricted acres of land. And by implementing this law, we've had the opportunity to acquire about 4,000 to 5,000 acres in the nation's name, and restricted through the land buyback program, the COBEL settlement. But I would anticipate that we'll secure another 4,000 to 5,000 acres restricted land. Now, the beauty of the COBEL program is those restricted, that restricted property, once it's transferred to the nation, it's transferred in trust status. We'll own that property, that acre equivalent, or that interest in that property in trust. And that's an element of the Coppell settlement, part of the lawsuit in that settlement. The federal government is required to take that property into trust for the benefit of the Osage Nation. So when we require that property, those restricted acres, when the deeds are filed, that property is in trust for the nation.
Okay, I'm confused, because I thought that the restricted real property was the same function.
I was talking merely about the land buyback for Coppell.
Okay, but this restricted real property, it stays in trust also?
No. Restricted real property stays in restricted status, which is not trust status.
Okay, all right, thank you, that helped me. But it doesn't lose its restricted status?
Right, does not lose its restricted status.
Okay, all right. Thank you for patiently waiting for us to get these things worked out the table. Please come up, because the public is listening to us. State your name and ask your question.
Thank you very much, Chair. My name is Victoria Graves, and I'm a restricted landowner. And I've worked with Mr. Cass and Ms. Curry over a number of years regarding my land, my family's land, and also with the Gray administration. Chief Gray, I believe, was one of the first restricted properties. I'm not sure the record, but that started this movement of buying Osage land from Osage landowners. And that started, I think, was 2007. Melissa was superintendent at the time. So I got a lot of insights from her knowledge, and also the patience from Mr. Cass, because it is a process. And that's how I learned about the current contemporary policy of where the tribe is involved now, and that they get first. If there's some restricted property for sale, they get the first chance to bid on that. Well, the downside on that for me has been, my experience is that sometimes it takes a long time. And the BIA has also informed me that, well, you can take it out of restriction and do your own net sale to an Anglo or non-Osage. So that's the downfall. So I always try to stick, you know, stay with the Osage land as being the main objective, that it stays Osage. And so if it gets into dire situation, possible foreclosure, I have to do something. So, you know, what's left? If the tribe is stalling a bit and they can't decide whether the money is going to be appropriated in this particular fund, then I have an option to go outside the tribe. So that's just an example that what happens, you start losing your Osage land base. I don't think that's what we want to do here. We want to increase the Osage land base for the people, for future generations, because it's valuable above and below surface. And we still have a long ways to go in finding the workable solution for everybody involved. So, but this particular land that that I have currently running through the department, Mr. Cass, Curry, is top quality soil. So some of the best in Osage County. So it's been very fertile ground. Was used a long time ago when my great-grandfather farmed for traditional corn for the Osage feast back in the 50s. So it's still producing. However, I've taken it out of monocropping from an Anglo farmer, and I've been using it for educational purposes. So it needs some, I'd say brush hogging, maybe, in simple terms, and maybe a controlled burn. So it is a valuable piece of property. It's small, but it's the soil that's valuable here that will grow and be fertile for whatever crop that needs to be grown. So I guess to make a long story short, it's just trying to keep it in safe hands. And if the funds take a while, then alternatives are out there to take it out of trust, out of restricted status, and sell to a non-Osage, which I don't want to do that, but that's what maybe might happen for some people. Or maybe has happened in past times in history. That's how a lot of our land base has been lost. Because at one time, all this 1.4 million acres was Osage land. So we're slowly finding ways to make a comeback, taking the power into our own hands. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Graves, for your words. Congressman Shaw.
I'm still a little hung up on what the differences are between Osage Nation-owned trust land and Osage Nation-owned restricted land.
Please,
they're not one of the same. They're different categories.
They are.
When an individual or a tribe owns land in trust, the title is held in the U.S. government on behalf of Osage Nation, and it becomes tax exempt. And that's really the biggest difference between trust and restricted land. It has the same protection, but you may or may not have to pay taxes on restricted land depending on whether or not it's a homestead allotment. Otherwise, in accordance with the O6, with the O6 Act, we have to pay taxes, ad valorem taxes to Osage County. So that's kind of the difference. Most other tribes, their land is all held to trust, and they don't have to pay taxes.
Does restricted land ever get transferred to trust status by the appropriate process?
There's a procedure, but offhand, I do not know of anybody that's successfully done that in the last 30 years.
Any more questions before an executive session? I think that's about time to get down to that. I would entertain a motion to go into executive session for the purposes of proprietary and confidential information matters.
Second.
Is there a second? The motion and a second. All in favor say yes.
Yes.
Okay, we are now in executive session. I believe that everybody that's in the room stays in the room at this point.